If you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star two if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions.
So, Jill, one of the quick question I had for you was when you were talking about infusion and E&M services, okay, this is a dumb question, but what does E&M actually stand for?
Oh, well, thanks. E&M are evaluation and management codes.
Okay.
Those are the codes such as the like an office, you know, level 2 visit for a follow-up patient, 99212, or level 3, 99213.
Okay.
They're codes that would
be evaluation and management services.
Evaluation and management services, yep, done by the provider.
And when it comes to coding, first of all, where can, say, you know, you have a new nurse who's working in an office, who would she go to find out, you know, who does the coding in her office? Is it typically just the medical biller, or is there typically staff just dedicated specifically to just doing coding, correct?
Yeah, so in the office setting, I think that you will find primarily that there is the billing staff, the business office that's responsible for this, and oftentimes there'll be a certified coder on staff. Especially in today's times with, you know, the threats of the audits and the penalties and such, I certainly think it's a great investment to have coders on staff that can help educate the clinicians and their colleagues on what it takes to document and code appropriately for these services. So in my experience, you know, there was a lot of trial and error learning until we got to a point where we could afford to have our own coder on staff. And then I thought it was invaluable to be able to seek her advice, and she had all the correct websites and all the, you know, the people, her, you know, friends and peers that she had built rapport with that she could, you know, email and seek responses for certain situations. There were a lot of coding changes that took place in 2007 and 2009, and I think it took until at least the end of 2010 to get a lot of that clarified. And I think there are still questions as we have some new and advancing therapies, you know, just with the technological advances and the acuity of the therapies that we're giving. I think there's still a lot of questions and a lot of things to work through.
Absolutely. Rhea, do we have anyone in queue?
There are no questions in queue at this time.
Okay. So,
you know,
well,
to follow up on your question, Jen, about, you know, sure, the nurse and who would she go to, you know, unfortunately, we hear a lot about, there's, you know, a lot of smaller offices or there are nurses that are in clinics that maybe don't have as easy access to that coder. And so, you know, that's when I think they have to seek out their supervisor and say, you know, I need to know exactly what the documentation specifics should be for what I'm giving. And then for them to have specific case examples that the coder can go over with them. People often create and it helps cue them on, you know, to create things such as the start and stop.
So let me give you a concrete example that maybe many people can relate to and see how you would code this then. So if you have a patient who's coming in suspecting of a new relapse, and the physician, so do you have a new patient that's coming in?
Getting a interference or something.
Can you hear me now? Jill?
Rhea? Or Jen?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I'm here.
Okay. So if you have a new patient coming in.
I'm on the line if there's anybody else out there.
Yep, I can hear you, Jill.
We're all
here. Oh, good.
Okay. So if you have a new patient coming in who's suspected of a relapse, they have new symptoms, and the physician determines that they, in fact, need to have some steroid infusions, and you have an infusion center on site, how would you go about coding both the office visit and then the infusion services?
Right. There would be a modifier that was put on the code, on the E&M code for that. So the physician can, in fact, it was a separate identifiable service. He saw the patient and maybe he determined that they were experiencing some, you know, osteoarthritis. And he could even send them, if you had a neuro-ophthalmologist on site and they needed to go for some testing, they could even go for those services because those are a different diagnostic service, but there would be an evaluation tied to it. So sometimes, you know, even in the same practice, the same specialty, there might be some subspecialty or specific reasons that required the service. So as long as you can prove the medical necessity of that, then it is appropriate to code that.
Okay. So specifically, you would have a code, say, for a follow-up visit, a level 3 or level 4, and then they would be billed for the methylprednisolone, correct, over the course of the hour. And then that would, you would just code really for that and the modifier.
Right. Correct. Yeah, because maybe, you know, while the different diagnosis is not necessarily required, their primary diagnosis may still be 340 or MS. Maybe the person was complaining of some numbness and tingling or some other deficit, and those are some, you know, significant other reasons that the physician wants to be able to treat that they may suspect that they're having, you know, an exacerbation or such and want to treat that. And so then they can code the first hour of infusion, the hour-long methylprednisolone, and that would be the 99365. And then they would have the medication, the J2930, and if they got 1,000 milligrams, that's times 8 units because it's incremented at 125 milligrams.
Okay. So you can actually do it incrementally, like you said.
Yes.
Okay. Great. Thank you. All right, let's take questions from the audience.
Certainly. Our next question comes from the line of Patricia Pagnotta in Orlando, Florida. Please proceed with your question.
Jill, thank you so much for a great presentation. Lots of information. I was just wondering if you could just touch on the difference or the decision whether or not to buy and bill versus going through specialty pharmacy, how a infusion center decides whether or not to do that.
Right. Great question. Good to hear from you, by the way. Thanks for being online. Yes, so, you know, it's really independent clinic's choice whether they do buy and bill or specialty pharmacy. There's a potential to create a little more revenue with the buy and bill, because you're able to bill for the medication and receive reimbursement for that. As with the specialty pharmacy, it's billed through their specialty pharmacy, and there's not an opportunity for any kind of reimbursement for the physician's office. However, there's a lot of incidental expenses incurred in doing specialty pharmacy that that we are not provided any reimbursement for, such as, you know, someone has to order the drug. So there's that person's time that's looking for, you know, Jill's coming in for her infusion on Wednesday, and on Monday, you know, you want to secure that that drug is going to arrive that afternoon or on Tuesday. So you really have to start calling the week before. So it takes a lot of planning on the part of the person who's kind of overseeing the specialty pharmacy orders. Then there's the person who actually has to receive the medication to make sure that it is stored appropriately once it's shipped, that it is delivered, that they're expecting the package. It's not sitting in a adjacent building or a different suite or something. Then there is actually the refrigeration and storage cost. You know, having refrigerators, you know, large enough to accommodate the larger boxes that often come with specialty pharmacy, supplies and such. And then there is, you know, there might be different facility policies on not being able to use supplies other than what is supplied through your facility. So the specialty pharmacy includes that in a package, and maybe that can be used or not. So there's, you know, something that has to be done with that. And then there's the follow-up. You know, there's lots, oftentimes they reorder paperwork with the specialty pharmacy. So those are things that deterred us, in my experience, at the practice where I worked, from doing as much specialty pharmacy because we felt like we did a lot of work that we weren't getting paid for. However, if the patient's copay or their out-of-pocket expense was going to be much greater for doing the buy-and-bill option versus specialty pharmacy, then we went ahead with the specialty pharmacy just to accommodate the patient. But the goal for the facility, my facility, was to try to wean that off so that we could try to maximize any revenue we could get on the actual drug itself.
Great, great. Thank you so much. A great presentation again. Thanks.
Well, thanks. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling in, Trish. Great question. Can we go ahead and take another question, please, Roya?
Certainly. Our next question comes from the line of Lori Mayer. One moment, please. Ms. Mayer, your line is now live.
Jill? Jill, excellent talk.
Thanks,
very,
Lori.
Very complicated subject. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes, I can.
Okay. You have such a specialty that it's very difficult. I do not do that much coding myself as far as that's concerned, but I find it just absolutely so complicated. I'm sure other nurses probably feel the same way as far as the coding is concerned, but I think that we could all benefit from education from you as far as the billing from the infusion process, because I, even though I don't infuse the patients myself, I'm in there all the time and involved, and especially if it's, you know, study-related infusion. Of course, we wouldn't bill for that per se, but it just seems like there's just so much more to it, and you really have to know the ins and outs to be able to effectively be cost effective for return.
Right. I think you're absolutely right, Lori. And, you know, it's a shame because as a nurse, you really didn't, you know, desire to get involved or in coding. But you, I think in, you know, reality, when we're put in these infusion situations, you're the nurse who's, you know, rooming the patient for the provider, and you're taking the triage phone calls, and then maybe you're administering an infusion, and, you know, on the in-between. And you have to know that there are documentation specifics. And so while you don't have to become as, intimate with the details as I have learned to be, I think that it's good to have a background knowledge to know that, you know, when you are pushing a medication, that's why it's important to document for the coder who wasn't sitting in the room that you flushed the line before and you flushed the line after, and it took exactly 2 minutes or 5 minutes to straight push this medication, or this other one ran in over 16 or 17 minutes, because you can see where that would make a difference now, not to just kind of round it off. It makes a difference. To the coder. So I think, you know, if we had to take away, you know, one really hot tip from this, it would be to try to limit the audits and errors and to maximize coding. It would behoove the nurse who does any kind of infusion to at least have, you know, a lunch with your coder one day to go over your different templates and codes and ask questions so that you guys can work together better.
Well, I think you're right, and I think they need to be very knowledgeable about what can be coded, just because, like you said, the documentation is so very important, and I frankly did not realize that all these little subsets that you could add to it, you know, where did it come that it was more the infusion itself that has to be more than 30 minutes?
Where did that come from?
Mm-hmm. 30, it has to be able to bill. I thought that you actually could do quarter hours, but you can't.
Right, you can.
You have to do this.
It is actually greater than 15 minutes. So starting at 16 minutes, you would have your first hour of infusion, except for the hydration. Now, the hydration, you don't code if it's under 30 minutes. If it's 31 to 90 minutes, it's an initial hour for that. But there are very strict guidelines for hydration and volume depletion and when that's to be used, you know, hours before or after chemo. So definitely if you're going to code hydration, you really need to look back at the guidelines for that. For the first hour of chemo, though, which is the 96413, or the first hour of therapeutic, the non-chemo medications, 96365, if it's 16 to 90 minutes, because then we're only 30 minutes in to that second hour. But if it tips by 1 minute and you go to 1 hour and 31 minutes, uh-huh. Or 91 minutes, that's when you can code that subsequent or additional hour for the therapeutic. That would be the 96366, or for the chemo, uh-huh. 96415. And that's where you can, you know, earn at least additional money for having, you know, gone over that time. But if you, you know, if you fall at an hour and 29 minutes, well, then you cannot bill for those 29 minutes, you know.
Oh, I see. Well, and it's very complicated. I'm sure that, you know, the people who actually do the coding, in most cases, it's probably a clerical person or clerk or somebody who's very specialized in the coding.
Correct.
So are they the ones that actually look at the whole infusion process and decide how many minutes are for this and for that, and then they can decide what code can be used?
Right.
Is that so, typically done? Not so much the infusion nurse is doing.
That's correct. It would be the infusion nurse's responsibility is to document time. So in one of the examples that I give on the slides, uh-huh. it talks about and ending at 13:10. But maybe something happened at 10:14 and 11:15. It's very uh-huh. important to document which medications actually were dripping or being pushed at those times, because that's what they're going to go by, and they are going to look at the, you know, it took from 10:10 to 10:14, 4 minutes lapsed, you know, or 11:15 to 12:25, you know, an hour and 10 minutes lapsed or something. And that's going to be very relevant for them.
Okay. So in your job that you do, and I know you have your own business, you must go around to infusion services and do specific training for them?
Do specific training?
Do you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I did a lot of training with the nurses on coding and the cheat sheet. I'm just explaining to them, you know, why it's important not for them to be doing a favor, but they, you know, if something went till 10:15, don't say it was 10:15. You know, it was 10:14.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so they, you know, it's important to, you know, for them to understand why that would be, because otherwise they think you're just picking on them or micromanaging what they're doing. But I think if they understand the whole global perspective, then it's, you know, it's hard to retrain a clinician to think a little bit more business minded. And I'm not really advocating for people to do that, but I think it's important as the clinician to understand the rationale behind the business end of it as well, because it gives you a different perspective. And it may actually be that you're the one who creates or at least helps the coder with identifying a better way to document mm-hmm. that it's not mm-hmm. as time-consuming or complicated for the clinician, so it doesn't slow them down.
Well, I think I agree with you. I think the clinician really needs to be educated in this whole matter so that they understand the whole system and the whole process and have a good generalized business background, especially when they were dealing with this. But very complicated. I listen to you, all these codes and minutes, and you know, my mind is just too tired to really take
yeah.
it all in right now.
Yeah, so, no, that's
but anyway, okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks, Lori. Well, speaking of, we'll kind of pull for more questions. And in the meantime, Jill, speaking of complicated, you had mentioned templates. Can you speak to that at all? Are there templates out there that perhaps could be shared, or do you know of good resource websites that we could maybe post on the website afterwards? Hello?
We do have another question.
Oh, okay.
Our next question comes from the line of Teresa LaRocca from Brooklyn, New York. Please proceed with your question.
Hi. Hi. Great presentation. What about if, it's good to hear you all too. What about if the doctor also sees the patient and say you were supposed to do 3 days and they then decided it's 5 days? Can we do a separate bill for the doctor coming in?
Hello?
Yes, I'm still here.
Roy, are you there?
Yes. One moment, please. I believe our speaker has accidentally disconnected.
Okay.
No, I'm still on.
And Teresa, you're on. I think Jill may have been disconnected.
How do I get back on?
Jen, you're still connected.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, one moment,
okay.
Please.
Okay. So this is Teresa. I said, Jill, great presentation. What about if the doctor also sees the patient and then decides that the patient needs to go from 3 days to 5 days? Is there a separate coding we can go for that, or is that still just the same coding for that?
Teresa, it's Jen. I think we're trying to get Jill back on the line.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. I think she got disconnected.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
Now are you joining Jill Bevan?
Oh, hi. Sorry, I got lost. I went into orbit somewhere. Teresa, are you still there?
Okay. I'm still here. How are you?
Okay, I'm good. I'm good. I'm sorry. So your question was,
it was
how to bill for
patient. Right. My question is, if a physician comes in,
right.
You know, normally we have a physician see the patient, but you can't bill for that because
right.
It's not as separate. But if a physician then decides that the patient needs, say, they order first 3 days and then they order 4 days, is there a
right.
separate way we can?
Yes. So exactly the definition for being able to do this is that you can report your E&M code with the modifier 25 in addition to the IV administration if the patient's condition requires a significant separately identifiable evaluation and management service. So if your person was receiving 3 days of IV solumedrol and they were still complaining of something, or they had a new complaint, or they had a worsening, or they had no improvement, or if the physician needed to reevaluate them to see if the effects of the treatment,
if they were getting better,
right, then that is medically necessary. And so while it does not require a different diagnosis, the prescriber would evaluate the patient and document their evaluation, and why it was. You know, why, what it was they were looking at, and why they made a treatment decision. They decided to extend or add additional days. And so they had to do some judgment and some medical review there. And so that qualifies. And so they would do, say it was a level 2 or a level 3, whatever it qualified for, and they would just modify the 25 modifier.
Okay, great. And what about one other question? What about if you have multiple sticks? Is
right.
that just all in the starting of the IV infusion? Yeah.
You know what? Even if you're accessing a port, an implantable port, and you think about everything you go through with the sterile dressing and all that,
right.
none of that is included. None of that is included. And your additional saline or your kit you use for that to
mm-hmm.
irrigate that is not included. So if you spend an hour trying to stick the person or heating them and putting on a topical anesthetic or something like that, none of that is covered. See, in years past, that's what people would do from the start of, you know, that IV service. But it became, I don't remember if it was 2007 or 2009, it became rule that you have to only do it from the start of the drip. So if I'm, you know, if I'm going to even flush their line and then it's a couple minutes before I connect the tubing and start the drip, oh, well, you know, I can only do it from the start of that drip.
Okay. Thanks. You're
yeah.
great. Good to
yep.
hear from you.
Yeah, good to hear from you.
Thanks, Terry. So while we're waiting for other questions, a question I had, and I don't think you heard it, but I was saying, you know, this is very complicated information, and you had mentioned templates.
Yes.
Are there templates available, or
right.
are there resource websites that you know of that we could probably or possibly put up on the website?
Right. And so I don't know of any templates that are, like, you know, universal for this, because I think it's really specific to the kind of infusions that your office gives. So there probably are some for certain chemotherapy, regimens. There are probably some for, just certain infusions for, you know, maybe rheumatology or whatever. But I don't know of any specific for MS, other than the ones that I know of colleagues that have created that we've shared at the CMSC presentations that we've delivered.
Okay.
So, you know, I have a friend that's in Virginia that has some, a friend that's in Texas, and a friend in Georgia. And so I know that there are some on those. But what I could do is I could help compile some of those templates, and as long as it's okay with their facility or they de-identify themselves, that we can use that very generically. We could certainly put some out there.
Yeah, I think that might be helpful.
Yeah, and I'll look for some resource websites for that too, and then follow up with you or whoever you
Great.
Deem appropriate. Yeah.
Great. I wanted to ask Ray, do we have any other questions in queue?
We have no questions in queue, but as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue, or you must press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we poll for any additional questions.
Jill, while we're waiting, do you foresee MS centers with the potential approval of additional infusion center or infusion drugs, do you see that being kind of siphoned out to hematology oncology centers, or do you think it would behoove MS centers to look into doing infusions in their own offices?
Right. I think that that people should look into doing those in their own offices, just because I've seen success with that in my personal experience. But I do think that efficiency and volume will help drive that. And so if that's not something that can be, you know, created in their setting, then maybe they want to consider doing that to some centers that are already having, you know, some experience with that. However, I'll say that with, I do hope that the nurses that are sending orders to those centers will follow up with some just basic education for the patient with MS to maybe the nurses who are don't have experience in working with MS, but maybe just, you know, patients that have cancer, and it's different. And so I think that it's important to have education in those sites.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Royal, do you have any additional questions?
We do. We have a follow-up from Lori. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, this is Lori again. I think that you had talked about the templates. I think having the templates as a resource, I don't know if we can put them on the IOMSN website, it would be absolutely wonderful for access. I do have one question. If you had an patient in the infusion suite and obviously they were being infused and you were going to go in and spend time educating them on perhaps maybe the drug that are on or something else, is that something you can additionally bill for or use a modifier for while the patient is in there?
Right. So you would not bill the 99211 because that's the exception. So as the registered nurse in the infusion suite and not an advanced practitioner that's going to meet some of the other evaluation and management codes, the 99211 is not one that you can use with the infusion. It wouldn't qualify. However, I say that, and I'll tell you that I was recently at a meeting where a colleague said that in their area, they actually have a code for education where they bring folks in, and they're able to charge and bill and actually have collected for an education code. That's something that I'm not familiar with in my area and haven't used successfully. But I do know that there were some other nurses looking into that, and some other people I know that are familiar with coding that were also looking into that. Because I think one thing I didn't bring out here is I didn't talk about reimbursement, just because this was really a billing for infusion services and more of like
uh-huh.
coding and documentation.
Uh-huh.
But I do, and I don't want to launch into this either, but I can just at least say that per region, there's going to be huge variances in some coding guidelines and some local coverage determinations based on the third party, the insurance carrier, or even the Medicare administration or MAC for the contractor for Medicare in that region. And so I think that will vary. But I people can look into education codes, but I'm not familiar with any education code that will go with an infusion, especially done as a 99211.
Okay. So there's no other way that you can think that you'd be able to make that possible?
A separate visit completely, but the way we did it was to start the infusion, and you don't have a separate code for it, but you're basically, at least then, while you've got your infusion running and that's going, and you're with the patient to check their access and such, anyway, is a good time to be able to educate the person, especially if you have to watch them closely. But if you want to educate them otherwise and not during the infusion time, you could have a different visit.
Well, and then you could bill for the different visit, that's right. But what you're saying is that if you're specifically, say for instance, I'm not the infusion nurse, and so I have an infusion nurse in there, but I'm going to go in there and I'm going to spend time with that patient and educate them about the medication that they're on, or perhaps even something else. So if somebody else comes in, that can't be built separately under any type of education code.
Not
is that,
that I'm
correct?
Aware of.
Not that you're aware of.
Yeah,
okay.
Not that I'm aware of. Now, if it was a provider that could bill a higher level evaluation and management code, and they had the patient's condition warranted
mm-hmm.
that significant separate identifiable service, they
okay.
could in fact bill something and put that modifier 25 on it, but not to my knowledge anything with an education code. But if there's anybody listening that knows of one, I invite them to please let us know what else we can explore so that we can get back to others on that.
Right. I would think that would be great if we could get some information on that. Anyway, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lori. Along that vein, can you bill if you have somebody coming in for an Adalizumab infusion and the hour that you're monitoring them post-infusion, can you bill for that?
No. There is no code for the observation hour post the Adalizumab, at least not that I'm aware of. If you're just keeping the if you're observing the person, you've say maybe disconnected their natalizumab and you've left them HEP locked, there's certainly no code. There have been people to keep the person maybe closer to the chair and not wandering around, lots of times tied to the pole of fluid, and that's just keeping the site accessed and the line patent. Then there's no code for that either. If there is a reason that they require additional hydration, and it can be it's identified as a volume depletion issue, or that the medication will cause that, then that's something that's evaluated, and then it's medically necessary, and then we can look into hydration for that.
Okay.
But not just as a means to keep the line open.
Sure. Okay. Great. Roya, do we have any other questions in queue?
We have no questions in queue.
Okay. Well, then I think we will go ahead and wrap up this evening. Jill, you have been tremendous, an incredible resource, despite being as sick as you are. We really appreciate you being with us this evening and sharing all of your information, your wealth of knowledge, and your many, many years of experience.
Thank you, Jen. I appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity to share some of what I know, and I invite people to please let us know their experiences so so that we can, you know, share amongst our peers.
So on behalf of the IOMSN Town Hall Discussions, I'd like to thank Jill Bevan for your presentation, and thank you again to Novartis for supporting these programs through their unrestricted educational grant. We'd like to remind you that next month we will be back on the every second Monday. We, of course, moved this month because of ECTRIMS last week. So please join us next month on Monday evening, November 12th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for the next town hall discussion entitled Office of the Inspector General's 2013 Work Plan, Are You Doing It Right? And that will be presented by Ann Dunn. So remember to visit the IOMSN website for a summary and podcast of tonight's program at www.iomsn.org. So we ask you to complete the post-town hall discussion survey, which will be emailed to you most surely tomorrow. This concludes tonight's meeting. We thank you for joining us.
Thank you. This concludes tonight's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time, and thank you for your participation.